This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, I hope you're happy, Internet. You forced me to play Hilary Duff.
Okay, just, that's a throwback.
I'm at the mercy of just whatever the system's dished out at this time.
Yeah, shame. It's okay, Ben. We won't hold it against you.
Thanks, Mubs, because you guys generally do. So I'm taking that with a pinch of salt. I mean, look what else. The system is just all hits, huh?
Hey.
Next up, we've got French Montana.
Hey.
Sorry. Wow. What's she working with?
I don't think this is too bad. It makes me want to put my hands on my knees.
Speaking about your hands, why is there a men's fitness bodybuilding magazine on the desk in front of you today?
Let's see.
I asked you about this as soon as I walked in.
I was trying to do a radio show when you walked in. I don't know what you're doing. That is so.
Sia's got this
fitness mag, but it's like a really buff guy. Mubs, describe this man that's his adorned the cover that's sitting next to Sia here.
I mean, he basically looks like he could be the lead actor in any action movie that you were preparing to script. He is chiseled. He is oiled up.
Oh.
He is. Oh. What is that? It's a 4-pack, but okay. It works. This is quite a nice body shape. Basically, he's like a well-defined piece of man that you could mount and ride.
Okay, Miss Malloy.
Well, you must do things to bodies like this. Otherwise, it's a complete waste.
Well, exactly.
Well, I don't know how this landed up on my side of the desk. Genuinely,
because
I do not.
Because you picked it up and brought it here.
No.
Yeah, Mubs, give it to
you.
I'm going to put it on the Instagram. Whoopsie.
Ben Kopinski written all over it.
I don't know, Sia. This guy looks like your type. I've seen guys like this walk into the studio, and then you are like...
No, thank you. I'll give that a little skip. I consider more of a short pen
more
my
than
time.
A little skip.
More than that. That one, this guy was a guest on...
So there is a story. See, we dig and then we find.
He was just here in studio because he was a guest on The Worst Guys. And because he's a cover star, I think this is what cover stars do. You just casually walk around with a magazine of yourself. And he left this here.
Well, when you look like that, you're allowed to walk around.
Sidebar, I'm not interested in the magazine because
the
I saw the real thing.
I saw the real thing. So you went in booth at this
why
stage.
Do I have to play around with the magazine?
I just realized that the Gareth Cliff Show Instagram account has been dreadfully neglected of late.
Now, whose fault is that?
Well, it's one of my many responsibilities.
Many, as he slaves away
every
day.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
Ben,
yes.
It does not go unnoticed.
Bollocks, it does. You guys didn't even know whose responsibility it was until I just told you.
I have a good excuse. I don't know how to Instagram.
That's fine. Okay, fine. So I'm putting this picture up right now on the Gareth Cliff Show page on Instagram. Look, Sia, I'm going to be quite frank. Your face expression isn't the best, but I haven't got time to take photos.
Thanks for working my angles.
Well, the lighting's better. You normally always crap on about lighting.
Oh, guys.
It's a nice pic, so you can go see this picture. I'm posting it the next minute. While I get busy with that, though, Mubs' big responsibility is to bring you the daily news, which she does brilliantly each and every day.
Oh.
So what's happening?
Well, you know how sometimes an innocent individual is looking for love? And then there is a horrible individual on the extreme opposite end of that equation looking to exploit. So we've got a catfishing story that involves an American man traveling 13,000 kilometers across the Atlantic Ocean to meet his lady love. His name is Michael Morgan. He's 67 years old from North Carolina. And he realized that he was a victim of catfishing and that his true love did not exist after he left North Carolina and made it all the way to Cape Town to meet a woman who just doesn't exist. So Michael arrived at Cape Town International Airport last week, Tuesday. He thought that he was going to meet Carol Jones. She described herself as a 35-year-old nurse working at Groote Schuur Hospital. She claimed that she had recently inherited $12 million from her diamond baron dad. Now, Michael, I know you're 67. But logically speaking, if somebody has just inherited $12 million, are they going to tell you, a complete stranger that they just met? Are they going to share this bit of news with you?
Well, she is. She's going to tell the guy in the fitness magazine. She's going to be cashing in on some of them apps.
So after waiting at the airport for more than an hour and then going to Carol's home and then her workplace, Michael realized that he had been duped. The retired divorcee works part-time at a pharmaceutical factory. He placed a personal ad on Craigslist back in December last year. He met her the following month, and the two of them started chatting via email. They then began exchanging messages. After exchanging photos, they also started to call each other. Mm-hmm. He says that Carol claimed to be a nurse working at an exchange program at Groote Schuur, and that she was a British citizen whose parents were living in Cape Town. Mm. She told poor old Michael that her father had died and that her mother was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. According to Michael, he says she was going to come to me, but then she claimed that she could not fly over to the US because her mother told her that she had inherited $12 million from her dad. She claimed her father worked in the diamond industry. She said she attempted to travel with the money, but that she had been stopped by customs, and that she needed a passport which would cost $44,000 and an additional 7,000 rand to get it, which she then asked Michael for. Guys.
Yeah. you don't want to hear these stories, but it's also quite hard to have full sympathy for, I guess, the victim in this case.
Yes. Because, I mean, I don't know, Michael. Must you be living in complete isolation to have not heard stories like this before and to know that when somebody starts spewing this kind of information, alarm bells should go off? Mm.
But you know, when you get to that age and there's not much hope, you really want to have hope in anything. And when this cute little thing comes and says she's interested in you and you haven't felt the touch of someone in a while, you want to believe in that.
I don't know, Michael. Pay for a prostitute to come and touch you. I mean, what? Like, why are you...
Well said, Mubs. There's an industry for this.
There's an entire business model that operates purely to service people like Michael.
And you'll get service. There's value for money there.
And you don't have to travel 30,000 kilometers to an entirely different continent to be touched by someone.
Or just, if you just want innocent companionship, then dogs aren't that expensive.
There you go.
Well, a dog is not going to... Never mind. I said innocent
companionships here.
Okay, true. Okay.
I just said innocent companionship. And yes, a dog will not.
Yeah, but then there are people who do, and they're sick, and that's why I said I don't want to go down that road.
Turn the cover of that magazine over. It's got you flustered.
That's got him short-circuiting. He can't think straight.
Honey, I've never been able to think straight.
Okay. All right. Good one.
Sorry, stupid. Let's move on.
No.
That was actually one of your better efforts, you gotta say.
If somebody had to tell you that they didn't poo for nearly 50 days, would you believe it?
What conversations are you having when that comes up?
Well, maybe you're a 24-year-old who was recently arrested by police because they suspected that you had swallowed Class A drugs. Okay.
Oh, no.
Lamar Chambers made headlines around the UK, reportedly for his incredible mind over matter approach to his bowels. So the cops, after arresting him, took him into custody, and they hoped that it would only be a matter of time before they would pass through his body, because they were convinced that this youngster has definitely swallowed some drugs, and now all we need to do is keep him in custody so that they can work their way through his system.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Chambers ate and drank just enough to stay alive, according to reports, without having to go to the bathroom, and he lasted 47 days without needing a poo.
But I don't think you can legally keep someone in custody for that long.
Well, this is the thing, is in a world of fake news, it's difficult to keep track of what, you know, what gets reported and then try and balance that with what is logical. So a whole entire expert has now raised doubts about Lamar's ability to clench. Trish McNair of the Primary Care Society for Gastroenterology says, I think he may have found a way to empty his bowels. Mm. I know police were there, but he may have emptied it inside his clothes and somehow managed to hide it. She highly doubts.
But he would smell it, though, huh? What's going on there, Lamar? It smells a bit funky. Oh, no, no. I just burped.
So she highly doubts that it is possible for somebody to last 47 days without, you know, having a bowel movement.
It's impossible. So Border Control or whatever that show is, the Columbia edition.
There's a Columbia edition now.
Well, yeah, basically they should just recall it Waiting for Columbia's to Take a Shit. Because what happens is they find these guys, they put them through the scanner, they see that there's cocaine in their rectum. And then the guy goes, no, there's no cocaine. And then they go to the hospital, and they literally have a staring contest, like waiting for this guy to take a number two. And everything's fine in the beginning. It's all cocky. Now, by law, you can't keep them for more than, I think it's 48 hours.
Really?
I think. Okay, I could be wrong here. It could be like 36 or something obscure, like 19 or whatever it is. It's not a long time.
Mm.
So by law, you can't. But they sit there and they go, yep, you're going to need to put a press on quite soon. And then bit by bit, they start getting a bit sweaty. They start getting a bit less confident. And ultimately, they need to take a budget. Because that's what happens. It's not about having like a strong sphincter or whatever. It's just that your body pushes waste, because that's what it, like, you have no business keeping waste in your system.
No,
so your body pushes it out whether you like it or not.
Yes.
And you can hold, like anything, you can hold to a certain degree, but ultimately it's coming out.
So Chambers was apparently supervised by police.
Sorry, Chambers is a pretty ironic name here, isn't it?
He was supervised by police around the clock to ensure that he didn't crack one out under their nose. While holding in a poo for 47 days is impressive. It's hard to believe that he managed to go to the bathroom fully clothed and have no one smell or see it. Doctors have also added their two cents worth here, explaining that his poo would have hardened and would be very painful to pass. So it would be unlikely that he'd be able to keep a straight face while trying to get it out. He was recently allowed to go to hospital after police dropped the motoring and drug possession charges. Yeah, I don't know, hey? Again, in a world of fake news, it's hard to keep track of which stories are real and which are just there to grab headlines.
Yeah, but kids, ultimately, don't swallow drugs.
Well, there's, you'd think.
24 years old. Yeah, quick buck.
It's not a quick buck.
It's not a quick bike if, you know, you're holding in your poo for 47 days, but it's...
Okay, we'll talk about being young and needing a quick buck. What age do you think is the most expensive of your life? So what's when you turn a certain age? It's a very specific number. What do you think it is? It's not 18, obviously, because, you know, people still would have been their parents. It's not 50 because you look like crap, so you're not spending that much money. What do you think is the most expensive age of our lives?
So it's obviously going to have to be an age where you've been working for quite a few years, so not necessarily your first job.
But
well, think about it, like, when is life the most expensive for you? There's a certain age.
Yes, it feels like it right now for me. And
every day, girl, every day. When you have your first kid.
Okay.
So just ballpark.
If it's a specific number, I'm going to go with 35.
See, you could guess?
32.
31. Mm. It has been proven through a survey of 3,000 people in UK, the age of 31 is the most expensive year of your life.
Wow.
How do they justify it?
Well, marriage.
Uh-huh.
So getting married, huge expense. Going on a honeymoon, huge expense. Uh-huh. Having a child, huge expense. Buying your first home, huge expense. Age of 31, you are dipping into all of this. You're dipping and doing it with all of that.
Yeah.
And it's been proven that at the age of 31, you could spend up to twice your salary in that 1 year.
Whoa.
Because of all these things happening in your life.
Mm.
So if you're 21 right now and you think, living la vida loca, you've actually got to save for that when you get to 31.
Jeez.
Like, you really do. I mean, you're saving for life, obviously, you have to. But 31 is going to kick you in the nuts so hard, all things considered, and life just goes on natural sort of trajectory.
The good news for me is that I'm past that, so the worst is over.
Well, I love how all of you are slanting your glares over at me.
What's your plan for 31, Sia?
Well, it's also about what you have planned for your life. I mean, like, if you are wanting that grand white wedding and you want that white picket fence and you can't wait to have the kids, then, well, you have a lot of saving to do. I just want to have a grand party for myself every year. That's all.
Yeah, so you see, it doesn't want to be 31. He just wants to date a 31-year-old.
No, that's not the case.
Sorry, 41-year-old. I always get that wrong.
No, not even. I just want the wedding, not the marriage. That's all it is. So you plan for the grand party, and that's all it is.
At least you're honest about it.
Yeah.
You just want the wedding, not the marriage.
That's all it is. Done. You want the festivities. Guys, did you hear what happened at Paulsmoor Prison on Sunday night?
There was what? How many people escaped?
Five. Well, six in total, and five have been taken back, and there's just one last guy who's still on the loose, and that is a convicted rapist who remains on the run. They broke out of Paulsmoor Correctional Center on Sunday night, and the five were rearrested, except for Siphenathi Ndandiso, who's 20 years old and is from the Krijfontein area originally. Now, authorities are saying that they're working together with the police. The department is positive that the inmate will be caught and brought back to justice within 72 hours. Well, they're very optimistic. But the five were rearrested and were apprehended on Monday in the Gulfsteenfontein, the Blackheath and the Ocean View area. The six men in total broke out of the prison's medium B section by, look at this, removing bars with a piece of steel that they obtained by breaking one of the beds. This is what a spokesperson for the prison confirmed earlier. The department said that it has launched an internal investigation into the incident overall. But yeah, convicted rapist still out on the loose in that area. Not exactly the most pleasant thing to hear.
No, not at all. But I mean, you get through the bars and then what, is the gate open?
This has to be some working, and I assume when they say an investigation is being conducted, that it was a bit of an internal job. There has to be someone involved in this who had a bit of a blind eye, who moved past this, who allowed this to happen as well.
Yeah, there's usually an inside job person. You know, somebody that you can offer something specific to, and then for them that's enough. So then they help you out a little bit. Yeah.
Because all of these stories, and especially here in the States, if you watch like the Crime Investigation Channel, there's always some sad little middle-aged woman who has been divorced for years, and now the slick and cool young inmate comes in trying to get her attention, and she ends up giving the key away or something. But yeah, quite chilling.
Yeah, I don't think Paulsmoor is quite Prison Break-esque. There's no glamour in Paulsmoor.
Oh,
I've been to that driving range. There's a driving range at Paulsmoor. You can go in balls.
So are you comparing the driving range to the inner workings of the prison?
I've been closer to Paulsmoor than you have.
This is not a comparison, but I'm just saying, are you really comparing the la-di-da of a driving range?
La-di-da. So yeah, it's at Paulsmoor. You're hitting old balls into a field.
People, like, you know, making a shank out of a bed.
I've been on the property, okay?
Oh, okay.
That's all I was saying. So
do you ever get worried when you go and play there?
I went there once.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't exactly go. What is this prison close to Lone Hill?
Leerkop.
Mm.
But that's like, I mean, you go there, literally go plant vegetables. It's very chilled.
I have two friends who live in that area, and I always just think, what if?
If you go to Leerkop Prison, like, I don't even think there's like an honesty bar there. The gate's open.
Really? I don't know.
Either do I, but let's not split hairs over inmates.
Don't want to play around with that. But if we are talking about inmates and bizarre people, sorry to be morbid, but Charles Manson, you know who that is, right?
Yep.
He was a very nice man.
Just misunderstood, I think, was the final verdict that people gave him.
You know, he did wonderful work for children's charities.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a wonder to society. I did not know that his body was currently on ice after he died. He had been kept somewhere, but currently now, the body of the murder mastermind, Charles Manson, may soon be put to rest after a Kern County Superior Court commissioner said on Wednesday that she would rule soon in the dispute over who can collect his remains.
Oh.
People are fighting over the Charles Manson corpse. But the tussle has been evolving since the 83-year-old, and this is who famously orchestrated back in 1969 the killings of pregnant actress Sharon Tate and eight others when he died back in November 19 in a Bakersfield hospital. Now, a man who claims he was fathered by Charles Manson and another who says he's a grandson are locked in a three-way dispute with a pen pal who was friends with Charles Manson and has filed what he said is the cult leader's will. Now, the three parties all dispute elements of the competing claims. There are doubts over the authenticity of the will filed by the pen pal Michael Channels, and there are questions about whether Michael Bruner, who was supposedly fathered by Manson, and whether Jason Freeman is really his grandson. Did you ever think we'd reach the day where people are fighting over Charles Manson's body?
This makes complete sense.
And
to
for
me.
What exactly?
They should just chop it up in three and give a piece to each.
But why are they fighting over it? Do you think like they're fame hungry?
Because they are insane. They they are no different to those women who write letters to prisoners and then end up marrying them. Because those two are also insane.
And then what do you want with the corpse?
Well, this is why I'm saying they should cut it up in three. They should FedEx a piece to each, and then we'll get to see what exactly they want to do with his remains.
The commissioner who's hearing all of this in the legal process says that she thinks it's unreasonable to have a body in storage while people fight over it. She says that we want to get this resolved as soon as possible, so we're in favor of her decision to get this speedily and out of the way. But it's weird that actually there are, they're saying, tons of other bodies who are now stacking up in the morgue because this process isn't being moved as quickly as they'd like to. But yeah, I still just think it's weird that these three are fighting over Charles Manson's body.
That's human beings for
you. Get a hobby, man. Jeepers. Get a hobby, get a dog, play a sport. What's wrong with these people?
Yeah, weird.
If this is going to be the sum total of your life.
Fighting for Charles Manson's body.
Jeepers.
It does not make sense at all. But anyway, yeah.
Well, thanks, yeah. I feel more significant as a human being.
You're making more of a contribution than someone who's fighting over a corpse.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yes. Yes, we all
are. As for this pen pal, he's the strangest one of them all.
Well, he's the one who... I don't know, actually. No. I would say that he makes more sense because he says, reportedly, that he has a will that belonged to Charles Manson. The son was... The one who claims to be Charles Manson's son says that he was conceived during a Wisconsin orgy. So, what a wonderful way that he came into the world.
The first bit of serious information we can take seriously here.
Look, quick paternity test there. DNA test will solve that one.
Not to be crass, but in an orgy where there are tons of comings and goings, how do you know who your real daddy is?
Yo, people are insane. People also have drug problems.
Oh, yes.
Well, they do. Tens of thousands of Americans die from prescription opioid overdoses each year. So, nice pain medication. Mm. And in a new exclusive analysis by researchers at Harvard University, they have found that opioid manufacturers are paying physicians huge sums of money. And the more opioids a doctor prescribes, the more money he or she makes. So it's like...
these guys, and they're prescribing what suits their bank balances.
Sure, it's like a classy drug ring, essentially, you know. Back in 2014, opioid manufacturers paid hundreds of doctors across America six-figure sums of, or rather for speaking, consulting, and other services. Thousands of other doctors were paid over $25,000 during that time. And physicians who prescribed particularly large amounts of the drugs were the most likely to get paid. According to Dr. Andrew Kolodny, who is a senior scientist at the Institute for Behavioral Health, said that this is the first time that they've seen this, and their findings are really important. He says it smells like doctors being bribed to sell narcotics, and he says that that is very disturbing. Yeah, just a little bit.
But hardly anything new, though. I can't see this is going to be shocking people. And there's that great movie, Love and Other Drugs. You wouldn't have watched it because Anne Hathaway's in it. But I mean, this is just, there's so many different instances of this being investigated and seen.
Yeah, sure. And I'm pretty sure we've all encountered a crooked doctor or two. Well, I certainly have.
Well,
I mean, I had a doctor who tried to prescribe.
Entrepreneurial, I think, is what they would like to be referred to.
You know, you think that because you're a doctor, you can call it something different. Meanwhile, if you're not, then they call you a cartel or whatever. But at the end of the day, you're both the same. You're both drug peddlers.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, man. Yeah. Just cutting it down to what it is, base value. Speaking of some more base value, I do enjoy this whole kids explaining things because it kind of reminds us back to simpler times when we didn't actually, our heads weren't so full of all kinds of things that distract us. Here, kids are explaining adultery.
Oh.
Now, I think most people actually would battle to explain adultery.
Okay.
But here's the kids having a go.
To be a movie star.
Do you know anyone who's an adulterer?
Johnny Depp.
What is adultery?
A dog running.
Describe adultery.
It's archery for adults.
What is adultery?
Being an adult.
What do you think the best part of adultery is?
Getting to drink.
Getting to drink. Yeah, I agree. What is adultery?
Parenting that is fun, nourishing, and all sorts of things.
Are your parents adulterers?
Yes.
Both of them?
Yes.
How's that?
Fun.
Fun, yeah. What is adultery?
What did you say?
Adultery.
Adultery? I don't know what those are.
You want to take a guess? Do you think it's funny, adultery? Until it happens to you, right? What does it mean when somebody cheats on somebody?
It means they're cheating.
And what does that mean?
It means they're not following the rules.
And what are the rules?
That you can't cheat.
What does it mean when somebody cheats on somebody else?
That means that they, you know, get the wrong person and they might accidentally get the different person that they're not supposed to get.
So when you cheat on somebody, it's usually an accident?
Yeah. But not all the time.
Sometimes it's on purpose.
Yeah.
Like if you went on to Ashley Madison and signed up to meet somebody.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks, kids.
Again, it goes back to the parents of these kids. Like, what are they teaching them? What are they telling them?
The right things.
But it's good to know that Johnny Depp's an adulterer. I always knew it.
Yeah, definitely.
I always knew it.
Without a doubt there.
So we haven't spoken about the Cape Town water crisis for quite some time because, well, I think there was much more to say. You know, the day zero thing was getting pushed back and forth and then it was taken away and it might be in June. But you never know because the DA is in charge. So there might not be a drought or there might be the worst drought altogether. I mean, you can never tell. You just
never know where they stand, those ones.
You just never know. I mean,
and they keep changing their minds and then, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Are the DA pushing for the drought to be a private ownership thing or should the state own drought? I mean, actually, who really knows? But there's a very interesting story that's come up. There's a Clifton beach house. There's a little two-bedroom Clifton bungalow. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got anything in Clifton, if you have a shoe in Clifton, that's probably worth like 3 million rand.
A shoe?
Well, if you have a shoe that's permanently there, it's a lot. So there's a two-bedroom beach house in Clifton that's owned by the city of Cape Town.
Okay.
That is being put up for auction to deal with water affairs. Obviously, I mean, prime real estate. This is probably some of the most expensive real estate in all of Africa, definitely the Southern Hemisphere. And it's going up for auction. Something like this would fetch, I don't know, into the tens of millions, I imagine. Because even if this place is a complete dump, and look, it's not exactly amazing, just that little stand alone is worth a few million. Which is, it's kind of cool, because now the money will be raised and it'll go into various structures. I mean, even if you were just to buy bottled water with this, it would go a long way. I'm not saying they're going to buy a bottle of water with a house, but you know, you get what I'm saying. But what I'm curious about with the story is that what else does the city of Cape Town own? Like, they own a house in Clifton?
Mm.
How?
Mm. And
how?
Like, when was it bought and why was it bought? And
Was it won over a card game? Did Patricia beat someone at golf and then that was it?
Maybe it exchanged hands in a drinking bet gone wrong. I don't know. But what could they possibly need to own this property for is a good question.
Strange, huh?
Very.
But it always goes, because the whole thing about this land, and I don't want to get into the land because it just makes me angry, because stupidity is unfortunately winning at the moment. But if the state owns, how does the state come to own land and all this kind of stuff? Is it just inherited back from previous dodgy regimes?
Because the state has done terrible things throughout history and will continue to do terrible things. Dodgy things, things that we evidently get to find out about. It's the state. They're fucking cunts.
Oh,
it's spot on, Maps. That's the official word on them. But like, I get municipal land. I get that because it's land that maybe wasn't developed or there was various, who knows who. But a house in Clifton.
And why?
That's not an accidental thing that you just. Oh, look at that. We've actually got a house in Clifton on the books.
So how long have they owned it for?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Maybe it's where they go to have their little DA swingers parties. You never know. A house comes in handy for different people.
You mentioned going there with like a UV light and this Tony Leon's jizz from the 80s on the wall. What a horrible thought.
I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt here. And this is really me taking a stab at it in the oddest of ways. What if the city was planning on building a park where the property is? So they bought that property and they were planning on demolishing the house, and years later that still hasn't happened. So
yeah, we need to know how long they've owned it for.
That is really me trying. Yeah.
So Tony Ehrenreich, who can only talk out of his other orifice, he says no, the land should not be sold off. It should rather be redeveloped so that two or three black families can now live in Clifton.
Oh, shame.
Okay, now.
How very considerate of you, Tony.
I'm all about this. I'm all for this. But then what are you saying? Like, and what families from what economic background? Because great, you're going to pull three black families from Khayelitsha and you put them in Clifton. How equal are we? And then who's going to pay the rates? And then who's going to pay the electricity? Then who's going to pay the maintenance
fees
on that property? And do they want to live by themselves in Clifton?
No, see.
I would, listen, sign me up. You can give me the property. I'll take it. Okay. I'll figure that out as I go. But I think the average family doesn't want to deal with that. So let's be mindful.
It must be those black families that when they move in, you know, the whites in the area go, you don't sound like those other ones.
Oh, it must be
those black families, no, the ones that get approved.
I want Nosbekengeshe, who comes in, who farms chickens in her backyard.
But this just goes back to the whole stupid thing about appropriating all these different houses and things. It's like, who then becomes worthy? Is it like, I'm more black than you, I am more whatever than you? This is all just such stupidity.
Look, whenever we talk land, I always say, guys, my land, and if you aren't familiar with KZN, I'll give some extra background to this, but I say my land is in Zimbali Estates. This is a golf estate right by the beach in northern KZN.
It's on the second floor of a complex. That's everyone's land,
it's on a golf course. That's my land. My land is in New York City in an apartment building. That's it.
Anyway, we need to get to our guest.
Yeah.
She is, we spoke about her briefly at the beginning of the show. She is she's a runner, but she's also a video strategist at Google South Africa.
Listen,
I was actually hoping that she didn't do anything else in life that was interesting.
Oh,
because then we could have just boxed her as a runner and felt somehow okay.
But it turns out you want guests to come here so that you can box them and bully them or something.
Did you not hear the first hour? I'm not having a good day so far. I want to feel better about myself. But by day, she's a video specialist at Google South Africa, where she helps brands in building media strategies for YouTube across Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa.
Look, that makes sense because she holds 3 degrees, including a master's degree. I mean, I love it when people come into the studio and just expose us for how average our lives have actually turned out been. 3 degrees she holds.
Yeah, and she's young as well, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Sia, where do you find these people? No, seriously.
Hello.
Hello, Zanele.
Okay, so Zanele Tlashwaya, she's with us today. She's a marathon runner. She's the founder of Rise 18. Zanele, we'll get into the serious stuff in a moment, but how do you know Sia? How does Sia come across you? Because it can't be by accident, he's just finding these amazing people in our studios.
Well, why is it such a surprise that I'm able to bring talented people, smart people, eloquent people into the studio? No, I'm joking. We got Zanele's email sent to us, and so we thought, hey, let's chat to her this morning.
Okay, because a lot of the time when Sia talks about people, it's because he's got drunk with them, or he's met them through a person who might know his neighbor. Anyway, so Zanele, thank you for joining us this morning. How are you doing?
I'm good, and yourself?
Okay, get a little bit closer to that microphone. All right.
Cut me some slack here, please.
Sia, you're a colorful individual. It's as simple as that. We can't get away from that.
Okay.
So, two comrades marathons. Now, before we get into the reason, maybe the motivation behind your running, when people say comrades, like, do they look at you like you're a crazy person? I'm looking at you kind of right now.
Yeah, I think everybody thinks runners are crazy people. Over the weekend, I ran 73 kilometers. So, yeah, I think runners, in essence, we just sucker for pain.
So, okay. And I love the fact that you say sucker for pain, because when you get out of bed on the Monday morning after running 73 kilometers, what does that feel like?
Well, your legs are a bit sore.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit sore. Because, I mean, you do train quite a bit, literally every single day, to prepare for that. So, in as much as you're in pain, you look at those 3 medals, because the race was basically 3 races in 1. You do a 42-kilometer, 21, and a 10.
Oh, my gosh.
You look at those 3 medals, and you're like, okay, it was worth it.
So, the reason I got a lot of respect for runners, I can run it, but I'm never going to be a runner. It's because I think you're superior to cyclists in many ways. Like this last weekend, it was the Argus Cycle Tour, the Cape Town Cycle Tour. I don't call it anymore. Like, do you guys look down at cyclists, like, historically as a group?
No.
If you look, you guys are you guys are sitting down.
I think all disciplines are different, and pain is pain, irrespective of whether you're sitting down or running. So we all just have respect for one another, I think.
And then when you...
I'm trying so hard for a runner, and I do this every time you do run, to say, yeah, we're much better than cyclists. And they won't do it.
No, I'm not going to get into that argument.
So let's talk about Rise 18.
Yeah.
When did it start, and how did it come to be?
So Rise 18 started in January 18, just to coincide with the number 18. And the reason why I started the campaign was I personally lost my father through depression and suicide. So he suffered from depression and subsequently committed suicide. This was in 2008. So I made a decision this year that I want to raise awareness, purely because there's so many misconceptions about depression, so many misconceptions about suicide, especially in the Black community. I think there isn't a lot of support, and people don't even know that they're actually depressed. So I made a decision that I'll be basically using my passion to raise funds and awareness for the South African Depression and Anxiety Group.
So, fair to say, I mean, obviously, your personal experiences, you know, speaks volumes of what you're doing. But, you know, like, I often think that if I'm not exercising, I get a bit cranky. I don't feel like I'm an absolute best person. Do you find that this is something that maybe the youth aren't learning through various channels, whether it be through school, whether it be the family outlet, that sport does give you a bit of an outlet? And this is something that people should really be embracing.
Definitely. I mean, even with me, from my own personal experience, if I didn't start running, I don't know how I would have dealt with the situation. I basically got tired of just sitting at home and crying and thinking about everything. And I think sport was, in a form of running, was actually means for me to be able to deal with the situation that I was faced with. So I think in the communities, in our communities, even the youth or even adults themselves, we have to find a way of using sports as a way of coping mechanism and a way of actually helping us to deal with the situations that we're faced with.
It's true because, sorry, Mabs, you know, it does also give you that level of independence about, like you say, you know, you don't want to be crying at home and have your thoughts, but sometimes it's good to think and get things out there. And when you do have, like, you're going through emotional pain, to have that sort of physical pain sometimes actually gets your mind away from something. And it's almost like a positive pain. Would that be kind of correcting as you have gone through this?
Definitely. I mean, when you are participating in some form of sport, it's basically you and your thoughts, and you go through the thoughts, and in a way, it's a way of you trying to deal with the situation. And in as much as you go through physical pain, but at the end, there's that sense of fulfillment that, for instance, I've ran a comrades marathon, or I've ran 73 kilometers, and I've actually fulfilled something and I've accomplished something, as opposed to just sitting at home and feeling sorry for yourself. And there's just that adrenaline rush and really that adrenaline high that makes you feel better at the end of the day, in as much as the problem does not go away, but in some shape or form, you actually get better with time.
Well, that's just it. I mean, problems never go away.
Definitely.
You know, you're never going to be able to erase what's happened in the past, but finding ways to deal with it, this is what I think what shapes us as human beings. Mm. Like, when you get to these races now, I mean, again, going back to the whole thing about using the comrades example, do you feel like a lot more positive about who you are as a person and what these things have done for you?
Definitely. I mean, in the last weekend, a lot of runners were basically shouting, "Zanella, rise," or "continue to rise." So knowing the fact that I'm actually running for a purpose is what keeps me going. And the fact that I'm doing something about the situation. I didn't decide to just sit at home and not do anything about it. And I've realized that there's actually a lot of people around us that are depressed or may not know, like I said. And for me to raise the awareness is actually making them find some form of support, be it with a family, through a family member or calling SADC. So it really is a sense of fulfillment when I actually do run these races, the fact that I'm actually running for a purpose and running for a cause.
I'd love to know what the training involves when preparing for something like the Comrades Marathon.
Yeah, do you have much of a social life?
And when does that training begin? How much work goes into it?
It takes a lot of time. I mean, training for me personally, I wake, my day starts at 4 a.m.
Every day?
Not every day. Like, you have to have a day or two where you rest. And you do different types of training. You do like speed training, hill training, and over the weekends I do my long runs. So at the moment, my social life is basically running. But the running community is such an awesome environment because we all like share our pains and we try to motivate each other. I mean, in the morning when you wake up, you know that you're actually not doing it on your own. There are other people that will be there with you, and especially with women, you can't be running alone. We've read so many stories about women getting raped, etc. So you know that I'm not just doing this on my own, but there's a community that is helping me to really fulfill the goal.
The way we complain just about waking up to be on time for the show.
No, that's just you.
And no, we all do.
So you've committed to running these 18 races between January and July. So you've got it all mapped out. You've chosen your 18 routes. How did that come about? I mean, is it about going to different communities while you do this to continue raising awareness elsewhere, just your hometown?
So there's different ways that I'm trying to raise awareness. Is I'm trying obviously to drive the campaign on social media, where I do like a couple of posts. Today I'm launching something called Rise Hour, where I've partnered up with psychologists and my life coach to just answer questions from the social media page, whether people have questions about mental illness or if they need any form of advice. So there's that one element. And what I'm also trying to do is that I've launched a YouTube channel where other people are telling their stories. So last week, one of our stories that was published was a story of Sandile, who was involved in a bike accident and who basically lost mobility and is currently on a wheelchair. And he tells a story about how he survived depression and how he survived two suicidal attempts. Wow. So the running part is just the one element of it. But I think what's also important is I want people to also speak up and tell their own stories, because with depression, people don't really want to tell their stories. People are always embarrassed to tell their stories. And I'll be rolling out these stories as the weeks go by.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there is a stigma around these things, and people don't want to create any more, because a lot of people they have this idea that it's a sign of weakness. You know, it's like they're not coping with how they're doing stuff, and they want to kind of hold it in so they don't get mocked or ridiculed or seen as a lesser person. But it is hugely empowering, again, getting out there and, again, like these distances and things you're looking to do. Have you found that you've kind of almost like recruited some runners with you, or people looking to maybe even just train with you just to be part of the positivity?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday I got a message from one of the runners who's actually willing to run the 160 kilometers with me. He's committed himself to running the entire race with me. So there are people that have come up and want to assist from a training perspective, completing the races. A couple of weeks ago, I was actually nursing a back injury, and one of the runners committed himself to even not running his best time, but he actually ran with me the entire 42 kilometers just to make sure that I finish.
Sorry, you had a back injury, so just ease through your 42 kilometers.
I didn't ease through it. It was painful. Like, every kilometer was really painful. But for me, like I said, for the mere fact that I know that I'm doing this for a greater purpose, that's what keeps me going.
I mean, would you say that you're a little bit addicted to the pain as well? I mean, you like a bit of pain.
I don't think it's really about the pain. I think it's about the fact that you conquer the pain. You know, when you're running something like a Comrades and you get to 60Ks and you're literally finished, the fact that you are running towards or running beyond your pain, I think doing something like that, it just makes you a different person. You basically are able to deal with whatever comes your way. You know, it's very easy for us to feel very sorry for ourselves and to just spiral down whenever something is painful. When you're running, everything is screaming, your legs are like, stop. You know, you're in so much pain, but the mere fact that you run beyond that, it makes you a better person, it makes you a stronger person.
I think Sia should do 5 kilometers with you.
Yeah.
I really do. I think as a little start here, because firstly, go to backerbuddy.co.za/rise18. This is where you start with the donations. We are looking to raise 180,000. We're currently sitting on 33,000. I think Sia should run a 5K with you just to kind of get people, you know, get donating. Ben. And look, Sia, I'll put 100 rand right now on you finishing 5Ks. Let's start small. I think if CA runs 5 kilometers, we all put 100 bucks in.
Yeah, I'm for that.
Okay,
Back in my days, I used to do cross country at school.
Yes.
And that slid off a bit in high school. And actually, I ran a 5K probably 2 years ago. And it took 45 minutes, which is horrible. So it would be such an injustice and a disservice if I tried to run a 5K with Zanelli, because I'd be holding you back.
Not really. It's all about the cause, right? So whether we take an hour or 2 hours. I mean, last week, like I said, we were running the 3-in-1. So you do the 40 kilometers and then you rest for like 2 hours and you do the 21 kilometers. It took
all in one day.
All in one day.
Yeah.
So the 10K took me longer than expected. But
which was?
I think it was 1:10. 1 hour 10 minutes.
But that was after the other ones, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Just to set the scene.
But the point is, it's not about racing. It's about knowing the fact that you're contributing towards the cause. Some of the donors have mentioned that they'll basically donate for every kilometer I run. So it's really not about the time. It's just about completing whatever you've committed yourself to.
Yeah. So you'll be handicapping her with laughter anyway, because you'll be next to her and she'll be trying so hard to keep a stride going. And then she'll end up getting a stitch within like 2 minutes.
Do you know what? I would do it if you bump the cheese off with the donation here. Then no, I'll
no, seriously, I think we all do it. I mean, 100 bucks. We can all spare that.
100 bucks per kilometer.
No. See, we're trying to get people, okay, all of us to kind of donate.
I'm trying to help you. Like, okay, let's do what? 100 for 5 kilometers?
I'll map out a 5 kilometer route.
Mm-hmm.
I'll film it even, and we get you going. I think this will be hilarious.
Zanella, are we doing this?
Yeah, sure. I'm up for it.
Okay, you guys saw it.
Okay, you'll run at my pace.
Yeah. Okay. I'm game.
High five.
Okay. And if all of us listeners,
I'll do it.
Look, we start small, because the whole thing about this, although we look at this fundraising target of 180,000 rand, you go, okay, that's quite daunting. Mm-hmm. We all do our little bit before you know it, that needle raises up there. But Zanella, what else do you need to do this? Because when I go through the logistics of these 18 races, this is a massive undertaking. Where else can people help and get behind your cause here?
So just going back to the donations, when we first started, we actually realized that if 1,800 people donate 100 rand, we can get to 180,000 rand.
See, there we go.
So if people can just donate 100 rand or more for that matter, that would be great. So we're also looking for assistance with the production cost, because like I said, we producing these stories where we'll be posting them on the YouTube page, etc. So I've got a team of people that are helping me to get those stories. We're looking for corporate sponsors. The race, the 180 kilometer race, is a race over 26 hours and you have to support yourself so throughout the night. So you start running from 5 p.m. until the following day. So if there's like a corporate brand out there from a car perspective, transport, accommodation, if people are willing to assist us with that, we will really, really appreciate it. Or a sports brand for that matter. It would be great to have some sports brand assist us with gear, for instance, or coming up with a t-shirt that we can print the messaging and sell, and all the proceedings will definitely go to raising the funds.
Yeah, so that's Rise 18. Depression and suicide are the silent killers in SA. 23 people commit suicide daily, mostly men, and there are hundreds of attempts on a daily basis, and it's also affecting young children. I mean, there was a case recently, a six-year-old boy, young as six, took his own life because of the stresses and strains of day-to-day life. I mean, it really is. We all know that this isn't just something that's lurking in the shadows. This is something that affects maybe someone in your family, a friend of yours, a work colleague, whatever it may be. And Rise 18 is going to bring this all to light. And so I wish you nothing but the absolute best. I really do. Firstly, because you're doing something I could never do. Mm. I'm not just saying it as like a humble brag towards you. It's just, this is amazing. This is superhuman in many ways. And if we can all get behind this cause, and I seriously, $100 and see you running a 5K.
Okay.
If nothing else, the video that I'll make, and I'm donating my video services here.
And we could break up that 5K to, you know, 2Ks and a rest and another 2 and a 1. But okay, let's do it.
As long as we finish the 5Ks, let's see. All that matters.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Sinead, thank you so much for your time today. Where else can people find you if they want to follow this? Obviously, backerbuddy.co.za/rise18.
Yes.
That's your home for the pledging.
Mm-hmm. And people can just Google Rise 18. It will come up on top of their search. And on the Facebook page, there's a Rise 18 page, as well as on Instagram, it's Rise18_. And if people want to get more information and want to email me, they can email me on info@rise18.co.za.
And that's the number 18.
Yeah.
.co.za. There we go.
Correct. All right. The idea of, you know, Sia started his day, Mavis, with the fitness magazine by his desk.
Yeah.
And now he's running 5Ks to raise money.
Love
for Rise 18.
That question of it all how worked out. It all worked is not out. Answered.
How about
but anyway.
That is, Sia, what a day. What a day you have. What a day you're going to have with all of this.
Well, before we wrap the day up, we've asked you how we can make your Cliff Central experience even more pleasurable, and we think we might have the answer. We've already disrupted the content game by creating audio that you know and love, and now we're making it even more convenient to listen to us. Now, with the limited edition of Cliff Central Unwired earphones, we've created wireless earphones that connect to any smartphone, laptop, or tablet for listening to podcasts, music, videos, and even phone calls, and while you're casually running a 5 kilometer run. With over 10 hours of battery life, built-in microphone, 3-button controller, and a ergonomic design so it doesn't fall out of your ears when you're exercising, plus brilliant sound and build quality, the Cliff Central Unwired earphones are the perfect match to your favorite podcast. Best of all, they only cost 550 rand. Discover more by visiting cliffcentral.com.
Very nice. So, yeah, you can run with those headphones,
mm-hmm.
which will get you through the pain barrier, perhaps. And then everything is going to be A-OK. But that is it for the show today. Gareth will be back tomorrow. He is just elsewhere at the moment. He's working hard for his money, because we all have to. So you'll be able to hear Gareth back tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have better luck with the internet and get your messages. So I do apologize, because I know you will get really uppity if I don't read all the messages out. But it's not my fault.
But we have a major interview coming up now at 8, something that Gareth has been looking forward to for the longest of time. It's Jeremy Thompson.
Exactly. But first, I shall play you a song.
Okay. The floor is yours, Benjamin.
Sorry, the system will play you a song.
This is CliffCentral.com.